Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Folks, Dr. Kevin Pham, a medical doctor, contributor to the Daily Signal and former graduate fellow in health policy at the Heritage Foundation, joins us. Doc, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Doc, you know, in light of what is going on in Washington today, one of the words most often used is this word of optics. And thinking around optics, how do we deal with bringing about a sense of security as it relates to the vaccine when we're hearing more and more stories of healthcare workers refusing to take the vaccine?
Well, the main thing is that we need to keep talking about what has actually been done, what has actually been tested. And all of these vaccines, they only get authorization if they have several tens of thousands of people enrolled in the trials. And as it stands now, over 40,000 people were involved in just the Pfizer vaccine trials thus far. And there's more going to be coming on. And, you know, if you dive into the data, let me be clear, there are certainly adverse reactions, and possibly adverse effects that are the result of these vaccines. But they, in the trials, they only found that four severe reactions could be attributed to the actual vaccine itself. The more mild things, so, you know, the fevers, the chills, like you're going to get a little bit of that, and that's just because of the body generating an immune response. That much is normal. So as far as the optics go, like we really need to be talking about what to expect, what we can expect, and what we have not seen thus far, which is very little.
But you would agree that this is an issue and is a problem. I mean, I'm reading stories about healthcare workers saying they're not taking it. In some of the most recent polls, pretty healthy percentage of healthcare workers. And I guess for those lay folks out there that don't, you know, stay informed about medicine and so forth, it's a legitimate concern for them, saying if they don't have confidence in it, why should I?
Well, a lot of it has to do with just the fact that, I think it's a legitimate hesitation because nobody has had this vaccine for over a year. It should be noted as well that the first couple of people who've had this vaccine for almost a year, like they're going to have it for 9 to 10 months already, because the vaccine has been tested since last March. So it's not without data, but you know it is really difficult to get people, you know, the lay people on board if medical professionals are refusing the vaccine. But this sort of widespread rejection is pretty localized. It's happening in like within communities, but generally speaking, most medical professionals certainly are very welcome and very appreciative of that we have a vaccine already.
Yeah, you know, most of the folks that I talk to, and I served on the board of a hospital for 24 years, everyone says, hurry up and get the vaccine. But it kind of struck me that more and more articles about these folks not wanting to take it. And I think it's something that we need to come to grips with as a medical community, to kind of speak in one voice there. There was a lot of discussion about, because of the nature of this being mRNA and not really being a live virus that's being injected in your body, that there are distinct differences. And I sometimes wonder whether or not we oversold that distinction. And then when folks started to have a reaction, they were like, well, wait a minute, what's up with this? I thought this was different.
Yeah, that certainly can be the case. When we're talking about the mRNA vaccines, you know, it is in fact a new technology. What we really didn't talk about is that it essentially mimics the same thing as just adding a regular virus, a dead virus, like a traditional vaccine. But we didn't really talk about how, you know, mRNA, all it does is sort of a blueprint that we hand to our body's mechanisms to create the viral proteins that can be attacked by the immune system. So it's just another way of delivering the same exact thing as we've had before. So yeah, you're right. We didn't talk about, we did talk about the differences a lot, but we didn't really talk about how it's essentially the same mechanism as far as your immune system is concerned.
So when we, obviously anything that's created a little bit of disruption as it relates to vaccine distribution, we know that that's a huge logistical challenge by any stretch of the imagination. And this is an unprecedented event. What has been your assessment of the vaccination logistical rollout thus far?
I think it's sort of proceeding as I would expect it to proceed. A lot of shortfalls, a lot of obstacles in trying to get this thing out. But it's been authorized for about a month. The Moderna one for less than a month. So the fact that there's hangups in the rollout of these vaccines is cause for concern, but I don't think it's a cause for panic. People are going to learn as they go. So there's some governors are doing it better than other governors, but essentially what we're seeing is that the states with the most, states with the lowest population density, they're having the most efficient use of vaccines, and that's to be expected because it's a little bit easy. They have more resources per person in their population. But you know, these things are getting people are learning. Even the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, is sort of adjusting his strategy, and he's opening up more people to be able to get the vaccine if they have it. And that's sort of the important thing, getting these things into arms.
Obviously, the incoming Biden administration had mentioned late last week that they were thinking about not holding vaccine in reserve and getting everyone that first shot as soon as possible. It seems as though the Trump administration has now embraced that position and I think announced yesterday that they were going to do the same, that they felt like they had enough reserve capacity at the present time so that they would start issuing as many of these first shots as possible. Good, bad, your thoughts?
It can be good or bad depending on how well it's done. The main thing, like it's not a terrible idea, but the main thing is to ensure that you can't complete the vaccination booster to get that full 95% effectiveness that we've been hearing so much about. You know, that's what we want. We want everyone to get this, to have, you know, 95% certainty that they're going to be protected from the virus. But and if they don't get that second dose, the booster dose within the window, then there's no guarantees of how effective it's going to be. But what we've seen in the vaccine trials is that those who received just the single dose of vaccines, that single dose was about 50% effective in protecting them as compared to people who received the placebo. So even if it falls through, the second doses fall through the cracks moving forward, and we don't have enough to give everyone that second dose, then they'll still benefit from the single dose of the vaccine. It's just, it would be suboptimal. If I were in control of the vaccinations, I would hold enough vaccine for people to receive a second dose, to ensure that people receive a second dose in a timely manner.
Obviously, there's another two vaccines on the horizon. I think the Johnson & Johnson may end up being first, and the other one, the name escapes me now. I'm having one of those moments. Does that complicate the logistical issue?
It does, insofar as the infrastructure that's currently being used, if the bandwidth is being taken up right now, which it seems like it is, that adding more supply isn't necessarily going to fix anything if you can't get the supply out to the people. But, you know, they are in the process of adding more and more capacity so that they'll be able to distribute just the first two vaccines. So I think as these things come online, then there's going to be more opportunities out there for people to pick up the slack. And I think people will take the opportunity because there's money to be had there. So as that is a dynamic situation, I think it will only improve. Had adding more vaccines to the mix, adding more manufacturing capacity for just COVID vaccines, I think that can only help rather than hurt.
Yeah, my audience helps me out again. AstraZeneca, I didn't have that right at the tip of my tongue. I appreciate the assist. Nonetheless, kind of curious, would it make sense to kind of divide the country into, if we ended up with four into quarters and distribute, you know, to each sector one vaccine? And would it not also make sense in the follow through as to how we study the impact of these vaccines, that it would make it a lot easier for us to collect that data and study that data?
There would actually be a lot of research potential here, but I think the main thing we should be prioritizing is getting people vaccinated. But I think you're right.
And I'm assuming if all things were equal, if all the production was the same and we got to that point, you know, later on in 2021, as to whether or not that might not be a better opportunity to try and, you know, get the numbers quicker.
Yeah. Well, what I will say is that when we have more manufacturers adding vaccines to the mix, then those vaccines should be going to where there are current shortfalls. And where there are current shortfalls of, like, for instance, if a county is receiving not enough Moderna vaccines, then they can just pull Moderna out of that county in general and then replace it with, for instance, a Johnson & Johnson vaccine. I think that would be completely reasonable to do that. But, you know, as it is so dynamic a situation, I think that they're pretty much going to be using this to patch whatever is falling through as it is, because all else being equal, nothing is exactly equal.
Yeah. And the reason I ask leading in, you know, there's a lot of folks that have angst and anxiety, as well they should, that in a lot of the rural areas, as well as the underserved population, where we don't have a lot of federally qualified health centers, FQHCs or others, where we don't have that infrastructure really to distribute the vaccine, that they, at the present time, are falling behind as it relates to the numbers. And it just seems that the logistical issues kind of highlight that in a huge part. And when you're trying to optimize this whole delivery system, that it seems ripe for me for tweaking and doing things and thinking out of the box that way to try and make it a lot easier to distribute this vaccine, because we're never going to get to the point of herd immunity until we get significant numbers inoculated, right?
That's correct. But herd immunity operations on the population level, so it would be possible to get certain parts of the country to herd immunity before the entire country does. Like, we don't have to wait for everywhere from San Diego to Portland, Maine, to get vaccinated in order to achieve herd immunity. Like, we will benefit in the meantime from just from being able to vaccinate the entire population of a certain community, which is not to say that we should let the rural areas stay behind for as long as we need to get the metropolitan areas. No, in fact, it's probably more important to get the rural communities access to these vaccines, because they lack the medical resources to deal with. Like, for instance, there's not a lot of ICU beds out in the country, for instance.
Right. And that was part of my point, you know, because it presents other challenges. I mean, you know, when you think about this spider webbing, I guess, effect or network here of all the trickle down impacts and situations that occur as a result of this, I've used the word confounding. This pandemic has been nothing but confounding to me. The more I read, sometimes the more confused I am.
Yeah, certainly. But they have logistics specialists that are working on this, and hopefully they're going to lean more on these companies that are doing the logistics to help get vaccines out into where they're needed. CVS and Walgreens are the really big names behind distributing the I believe the Pfizer vaccine, and then Moderna is contracting with McKesson, which, as I'm sure you know, is a huge name in hospital or medical logistics. So hopefully the state and local governments are leaning more on these companies who are specialized in doing this and relying less on the government arms of distribution.
Yeah. I think it was Moderna, correct me if I'm wrong, the other day announced that they feel that the efficacy of their vaccine will last for a year. How big is that?
No, if I remember correctly, I believe it was they said two years, which
2 years.
Should be. Yeah, I think it was 2 years. It could be 1 year, but either way, that should be plenty, because if you get enough vaccine out into the population, then you will, even if you don't quite hit herd immunity, then you'll at least slow down the spread of the spread of the virus, and you spread it down enough, then we're going to achieve a sort of semi-herd immunity, which doesn't exactly stop the virus, but at least lets it fade out into the sort of background level. And then eventually, I think it will die off, because this is a SARS virus. It's similar to the original SARS virus in the early 2000s. And that virus, after 2 years, it just disappeared from the face of this earth. And this might last, the SARS-CoV-2 might last a little bit longer, because it's much more infectious than the original SARS. But the original SARS did just disappear. So if we have coverage, immunity for 1 to 2 years, then I think they'll give us enough protection to weather this pandemic.
There's been some complaints that we're not really doing enough genomic sequencing at the present time in order to see just what the infiltration is of this new variant of the COVID disease is. Is it? What's your appreciation of that? You think it's fairly prevalent? We see a lot of cases. We see some areas where obviously it's a lot more virulent than in other areas, and the transmission rate is up, and obviously the positivity rates are up, and we're having to take these remedial actions.
Right. There's quite a bit of genomic sequencing, and they've identified thousands of strains by now. With regards to this UK variant, there's also a variant from South Africa as well. The UK variant, at least, has been found in the United States and several different states in people who are not connected to travel or who have no recent history of travel. So when you have a community spread within an area that didn't come from travel, then you know that the virus or whatever pathogen it is has already taken a pretty strong root in that community. So I think it's pretty safe to assume that the UK variant has been well established in the United States by this time.
Yeah. Have we identified any of the South African variant? I just read about that thing at the end of last week, and you know, my reaction was, oh, here we go again, another challenge, right?
Right. I don't recall if it's been identified in the United States yet, but I wouldn't be surprised. South Africa, there's quite a bit of travel to and from South Africa to other countries that, for instance, Australia, and there's plenty of travel between Australia and the United States, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's found here. It's been circulating for about 2 months now, is what they believe based on the genomic testing, but there really shouldn't be a problem. The way the immune system works has enough variation in the antibodies that it should be able to. These vaccines should be able to cover for these new variants. And if not, then it should at least provide some cross-immunity or protection against these variants as well. Nothing I've seen shows that these new variants are more virulent than anything else. It's just that the UK variant seems to be more contagious, which will present a problem. It would increase the requirement for herd immunity.
Absolutely. We have to end it on that. Dr. Kevin Pham, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate the insight and the information. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
All righty, we'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the whodatlending.com talk and text line. Stay with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.